All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton, and our first guest on the show today is Greg Mitchell. He keeps the Media Fix blog at thenation.com. He's got a blog of his own at gregmitchellwriter.blogspot.com. And, well, first of all, let me mention some of his books. So Wrong for So Long, Bradley Manning, Truth and Consequences, The Age of WikiLeaks, and Hiroshima in America in the mid-90s, and the brand new one, it's an e-book. You can find all the links at the Media Fix blog or at gregmitchellwriter.blogspot.com. Atomic Cover-Up, Two U.S. Soldiers, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and the Greatest Movie Never Made. Welcome back to the show, Greg. How are you doing?
Happy to be here again. Thank you.
I'm very happy to have you here. Now, let me mention some of these articles, too. At your blog, you've been doing a countdown to the day, and you've got a couple of great articles as well, The Great Hiroshima Cover-Up, and now there's also The Great Hiroshima Cover-Up at JapanFocus.org, which is a different take on it, and which is, in fact, I think where I'm going to want to start here in just a minute. But I also want to mention Special Report, Atomic Film Cover-Up, Key Footage from Hiroshima Buried for Decades, Countdown to Hiroshima, that's the blog entries there, and Press Censorship, How the Truth Was Hidden About Nagasaki. And, of course, if you just put in the names of either of those cities with the name Greg Mitchell into your favorite brand of search engine, you will find tons of great stuff going back years and years there.
Yes, that's true.
Yes, absolutely is. And good thing, too, because your voice in the wilderness on this, I'm not sure why that should be so, but it is that way. But I think it's an extremely important topic, and always
well,
appreciate
I've
having
been on it for about 30 years now, and you know, interest comes and goes. For the 50th anniversary in 1995, there certainly was a lot of interest, and it's you know, there's been less since. But I try to do my best. You know, the new book is, like I said, it's been almost 30 years in the making, in certain ways, and fortunately, it's getting quite a bit of attention. And there's I would particularly recommend a YouTube video. Which if you put in Atomic Cover-Up, you'll come to it right away. It now has about 28,000 views, and it was controversial, particularly a couple weeks ago or last week, because Google banned ads for it for a while on the rather comical claim that it promoted violence, when in fact, of course, it sort of is against the greatest single act of violence in our history. So it was a comical few days. People protested far and wide, and they eventually ended their ban.
Huh. Well, maybe you just had a friend in Google that was trying to get you some publicity.
I guess it succeeded. Thank you.
Yeah, well, they sure did a good one for you there. All right, so let's start with this piece at JapanFocus.org. The Great Hiroshima Cover-Up and The Greatest Movie Never Made. I didn't see this in any of the other pieces, this discussion of the memorial mound in Hiroshima. So
right.
It seems a pretty good place to start the story of the cover-up, as you call it.
Right. Well, the book is it's mainly about the suppression of film, all the film footage shot in Hiroshima and Nagasaki in 1945 and 1946, shot by both Japanese newsreel teams and the U.S. military. And then, you know, it's kind of a different, the whole book is sort of a different take, because often the discussion of Hiroshima comes down to, you know, certain historians who are critical of the decision to use the bomb, and then the veterans and their survivors who always say, you know, the bomb had to be used. And this book is certainly the first of its kind, because the main focus is on the two U.S. soldiers who actually shot the American footage, which was in vivid color, and then campaigned or tried for decades to get it released. You know, they were horrified by what they saw. So it's kind of the other side of the story, the veterans and their survivors who always support the decision to use the bomb. And here's two U.S. military officers who were actually there, shot this footage, and then tried to get it released. Now, that's most of the book. The other part of the book is a little bit more in my meditations, you might say, on Hiroshima, and I talk about my lengthy visits to Hiroshima and Nagasaki. I met some of the survivors who were filmed by these two U.S. military officers, are actually in the footage and survived. So I interviewed them and did a lot of other things, but what you're referring to is this memorial mound in Hiroshima, which is actually a rather small mound, and when you go inside it, if you're allowed, you find in plain pine caskets the ashes of an estimated 70,000 people that are just in a few, a dozen or a couple dozen, wooden caskets. And so, the point I make is this is one quarter of the city of Hiroshima and how it was reduced to ashes by the atomic bomb. And hopefully it gives people pause.
Yeah, well, it gave me pause this morning. this isn't a criticism. You're trying to get your story out as many places as you can, whatever. And a little bit of these articles are kind of rewritten the same kind of points over and over in a couple of places. But, this one at JapanFocus.com has this whole thing describing in detail this memorial mound, and you have a picture of it here. I can't quite tell in the picture, but it doesn't look like it's more than, 5 or 6 feet tall or something.
Well, yeah, it's about 10 feet tall. And
about 10 feet tall.
30 feet across is all.
Yeah. To think that you could fit the corpses of 70,000 people in there, and as you say, they cremated as many bodies as they could as fast as they could, in an attempt to prevent disease and that kind of thing. But then again, there were a lot of bodies that were nothing but ash.
That's right.
Because of the bombs themselves.
Yeah, very, very efficient process we invented there, reducing flesh to ashes in a second, and therefore reducing the need for, cremation afterwards.
All right, now I want to let you tell the story of these men and their footage in pretty good detail, as much time as we can devote to it here. But I wanted to start with that part of the discussion with why exactly this was covered up. I guess obvious reasons, but I'll let you elaborate.
Well, I wrote a book, as you mentioned, in the mid-90s with Robert J. Lifton called Hiroshima in America, in which we talked about it basically starts with the day of the bomb and then shows the American reaction in the decades since. And, this story sort of came near the beginning of that in brief form, but it was sort of part and parcel of U.S. suppression and cover-up and what we called shaping of the Hiroshima narrative. From the beginning, even before the beginning, with the Truman's first statement about the bomb, which was 66 years ago tomorrow when he released the statement. And the initial statement, virtually the first sentence, is we've bombed Hiroshima, a military base. And, of course, it was not a military base. It had some military presence, but we basically dropped the bomb over the center of the city, deliberately killing, tens of thousands or more. Had nothing to do with it being a military base. So there was a lie in virtually the first sentence of the nuclear age. And just as briefly as possible, basically the Japanese newsreel team started filming black and white footage in the atomic cities almost immediately. And when the U.S. occupation arrived, we seized all their footage and locked it up for decades. At the same time, a few months later, we sent the U.S. military team in there to film color footage, which was very unusual at the time. And so they spent many days in Hiroshima and Nagasaki recording the damage and recording the damage to people. And then this footage was deemed too horrible for the average person to see, not because of being squeamish, but that it really could show what the bomb could do. It certainly detailed the radiation effects, which people knew about but really hadn't seen much. Mm-hmm. And, the horrid burns, the new kind of burns and horrid injuries and everything else.
Sorry, Greg. We'll have to hold it right there as we go out to this break.
Okay.
We'll pick it up on the other side. It's Greg Mitchell from The Nation magazine, their website, author of Atomic Cover-Up. We'll be right back. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. It's Anti-War Radio. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Greg Mitchell. He's the author of Atomic Cover-Up, Two U.S. Soldiers, Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and the Greatest Movie Never Made. Still hasn't been made. And Greg, right before the break, unfortunate hard breaks thrown in here, you were discussing the reasons why the decisions were made back in the 1940s at the end of the Second World War to suppress the footage shot by Japanese and American military officers, I think, right?
Right. Well, you know, again, we had just fired the first shot of the nuclear age, and we were intent on developing more nuclear weapons, including the hydrogen bomb. And we, of course, very quickly got into an arms race with the Russians. So we both wanted to build more bombs, and, of course, we wanted to develop nuclear energy. We wanted to keep a certain, let's say, rosy glow around the whole idea of nuclear, whether it was nuclear weapons that might protect us or nuclear energy that might fuel power plants and bring all supposedly all kinds of other amazing developments. You know, also we wanted Americans to believe we could survive a nuclear war after the Russians got the bomb. So it was important not to show them, you know, only show them the bare minimum of what the bomb could do, because we wanted Americans to think if worse came to worse, they could survive a nuclear attack. Those fallout shelters in the basement could work, or the duck and cover drills in the schools could work. And of course, finally, some people felt guilty about it. You know, there were plenty of people like General Eisenhower, for example, who thought we never should have used the weapon. Douglas MacArthur was very ambivalent about it. Admiral Leahy, who was the chief of staff to Truman, was against it. And there were, even back then, many conservative columnists who were against the were against the bombing. So over the years, it developed into a Hiroshima narrative that the use of the bomb was necessary, and that the Japanese died, but don't show it, don't tell us about it. So I think, you know, we could list about five different reasons why this footage and other things were suppressed for so long.
Mm. Well, you know, I mean, there is only so much time, and I want to give you time to tell other parts of the story as well. But I guess, you know, the real point here is, as you say in some of these articles, there were really only, what, like three pictures of Hiroshima or Nagasaki that the American people ever saw for years and years. It wasn't until when, the 1960s or even later, that they saw anything
late,
but
right.
What the bird's eye view of, well, there's the mushroom cloud.
Right. Yeah, not really three individual photos, but three types of photos. You know, the mushroom cloud, the kind of devastated city. And it was all, all in black and white. And, you know,
so what we're talking about here is really an extraordinary cover up. I mean, this was a huge thing. They outright lied. I mean, you're such a calm guy. It's probably a good idea to leave the overstatement part to me or whatever. But, what you're saying is they told the American people, yeah, it's a big bomb, but that's about it. They covered up the radiation effects. They went to extraordinary lengths to keep the American people from seeing the truth of what had happened to the people of Hiroshima and Nagasaki for a long, long time.
Yeah, well, I mean, they didn't totally cover up the radiation effects. They covered up for a while, and then people then came to know, there was the radiation had this effect. People's hair fell out, and people would die eventually. But they certainly downplayed it, and certainly didn't show any images that might make people think about it. And I guess that's the point. You know, I know it's some people say, well, we knew about the bomb, and the bomb was covered, and the fact that these people died and so forth was not a secret. But it's quite different, particularly in the case of the American footage that I mainly focus on. This was color, very sharp, vivid color footage that was not seen by any Americans until the 1980s, almost 40 years later. And even today, if you stop people and say, have you seen any color footage of Hiroshima? 9 out of 10 people will say no, even though maybe they have, maybe they've seen snippets of it here and there. But the fact is, you know, you stop and pause and say, yeah, virtually every image I've ever seen of Hiroshima is, you know, black and white photo, black and white footage of some kind. And of course, color footage has a whole different other impact. And also, there was more of a focus in this footage on the damage to people, not buildings. All of the American coverage has been the damage to buildings and not the people. So no matter how you feel about it, you know, you have to keep the focus on people here. And I guess that was the point of the cover-up.
Mm. Well, and it's funny, I forget which article it was where you mentioned, and I was too young for this, I don't remember, that Ronald Reagan in the 1980s was trying to argue that nuclear war was survivable.
Right.
And this is in that era of tens of thousands of thermonuclear weapons.
Right. Right.
Dan Ellsberg has written about this at Truth Dig, that in any kind of real nuclear war between America and Russia, you're looking at hardcore forest fires and nuclear winters and the complete and total disruption of crops everywhere on Earth and the quite possible extinction of the human species.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, well, that was the 1980s, that helped spawn the great anti-nuclear movement of the 1980s that I was a part of back then. You know, there's even another angle in the book that people might find amazing was when I talk about the greatest movie never made, it's partly about an MGM movie that was going to be the first epic movie about the bomb in 1946. It was inspired by the scientist. It was going to have warned about the future of nuclear power. It was going to basically hint that the bombing of Hiroshima was wrong. And it was coming out of MGM and was supposed to be a blockbuster. And then the White House intervened and, basically censored the movie. The movie ended up, it's called The Beginning or the End. You can find my articles about it online. I even have the trailer for it, The Beginning or the End. And when it came out, it was a complete opposite. It hailed the bombing. It hailed the future of nuclear energy. And Truman was so involved, he even got the actor who played him in the original movie replaced. And so I've got some correspondence between Truman and the actor who he got fired. And I mean, it's just an absolutely amazing story that's different from the rest. But I would really recommend people check out the article or check out the book for this the great Hollywood cover up.
Yeah. It's Greg Mitchell from The Nation magazine, and if you look at his article, The Great Hiroshima Cover-Up, at thenation.com right now, on his blog, The Media Fix blog, you can find the embedded YouTube, or just go to YouTube or Google Video or whatever, and search for Atomic Cover-Up, and you can see some of this color footage from, it's both Hiroshima and Nagasaki, Greg?
Right, yep. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, no little kids in the room when you look. I mean, I don't know, maybe 10 and up or something. Nothing more than that. I mean, it's an important lesson of history that's got to be seen, but it's really horrible. And you can definitely see why the War Department didn't want, everybody discussing this, you know, what it really looked like over there at their, kitchen tables here in the U.S. No doubt.
Yeah, well, it's an important story. I mean, that's why every year I have to kind of keep coming back to it because... the lessons I could have called the book From Hiroshima to Fukushima. And, you know, we just did, even this week, they had the Japanese power plant. They found that the radiation levels had hit record highs. And now you have, a drive in Japan to ban nuclear power there. You have a drive in Germany that I believe that the leader of the country has, vowed to, end or get away from nuclear power there. So these truths about radiation, about, the threat of this, 66 years later, we're still learning about, we're still getting concerned about. So I think it is important to go back to look at why these truths were kept from us for so long.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when I was a kid, in the Reagan era, and I saw The Day After was probably some of the first stuff I ever learned about nuclear weapons was completely the other spin in terms of propaganda from the different sides and whatever. But it's just absolutely amazing to me every single day that the nuclear weapons issue is just not an issue in the American society whatsoever. I mean, here the Soviet Union could not possibly be on the march now, right? It's been a generation since they brought their troops back behind the Ural Mountains. It would seem like it would be the first priority of the American people to abolish hydrogen bombs. How can we leave these things laying around?
And even Reagan was for it.
Right.
Eventually, with his famous talk with Gorbachev where he proposed abolishing nuclear weapons. So
Right. And if only he hadn't been fooled into believing in the efficacy of the missile shield and stuck by that,
That's right. They
could have got it done.
That's right.
All right. Well, anyway, thank you so much for your time on the show and your great work on this issue, Greg.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Greg Mitchell,
thanks, Scott.
Everybody.
Anytime.